it's hard going to Jessica's grave. To me, that's not where she is. I feel her more in her home than I feel her there. 3 years and it hasn't got easier. I hate going there. It is cold. It doesn't matter if it's in the middle of the summer. It is absolutely a cold place to be. I shouldn't be standing there looking at my sister's face on a piece of concrete. To tell her, just little things.
Nobody or nothing can ever take her place. Never.
I will sit here and the anger will build up. I definitely want him retried. I want Jessica to have justice.
Justice, that's all I want, you know. I don't want nothing but that, you know. Everybody does.
That was Jessica Chambers' sister AJ, her mother Lisa, and her father Ben. I'm your host, Beth Karras, and this is Unspeakable Crime, The Killing of Jessica Chambers. I'm a former New York City prosecutor and correspondent for Court TV, now called True TV. For almost 2 decades, I covered trials across the country, and I've been following Jessica's case for a long time, and I'm part of Oxygen's television series of the same name. This podcast had followed the case as we examined Jessica's death, the search for her killer, and the trials of the accused. To recap where we left off in episode 6, as the verdict was about to be read, there was an outburst in the courtroom from one of the jurors.
Would you hand the verdict, please, to the clerk?
We all didn't agree on it.
Sir?
You said we all agreed on that verdict. We did.
The verdict has to be unanimous, so all 12 did not agree on the verdict. Is that what you're telling me, sir?
Yeah, I didn't agree he was there.
After much courtroom confusion and being sent back to the jury room 2 additional times, jurors ultimately could not all agree. The case ended in a mistrial. Panola County District Attorney John Champion decided to retry Quentin Tellis for Jessica Chambers' murder. The retrial was set to take place 1 year later, almost to the day. The district attorney and his team would have to regroup and figure out how to strengthen their presentation in court, perhaps by answering some questions left unanswered at the first trial. We spoke to one of the jurors who gave some insight into what took place in the jury room.
I am Benelle Felder. I served as juror number 6. First thing we did, we took a vote to see where everybody was. Because everybody had different opinions, we discussed it. We asked, why do you think he's not guilty? Why do you think he's guilty? We had to ask plenty of questions because we had to make a decision on this young man's life. For both mothers. That had been a long day. We had been there for hours. We needed to make sure that person voted their conscience because at the end of the day, you've got to live with this. The majority was guilty at the very first vote. There was a few holdouts. We asked for additional information. We had one particular juror, bless his heart, he wanted his vote known. He didn't agree with the not guilty. And that's where the confusion came.
Benia Felder's husband is in law enforcement in Pike County and used to be a fire chief. She had disclosed that at jury selection and thought perhaps she wouldn't be chosen as a juror because of that. She went on to explain some of the problems she had with the prosecution's case, about the man who found Jessica's car keys 2 days after Jessica was set on fire.
Jerry King was supposed to be one of the great witnesses, and he happened to be pushing his child in a stroller down the street, happened to see something shiny, picks up a set of keys in the grass, gives them to his baby, and he said, he did tell us that he thought that his girlfriend was going to be pretty upset, and I would too. I would have been upset with him. You're going to give my baby something off the ground, first of all. His testimony was not very convincing. I understand that his girlfriend had been an informant, and I think he had had a couple of brushes with the law as well. And I know that they have to weigh the good with the bad or weigh the outcome. But he just did not convince me that he was telling the truth.
Mrs. Felder also had problems with the way the crime scene was processed.
I think, and that's just me after looking at all the evidence, he only secured a certain area of the crime scene when I thought that he could have went a little bit farther because the fireman had said that she came from out of the woods. So he didn't say that she came from right there and that he didn't find her and they didn't find her in that car. She came from out of the woods, and from what I understand, they did not go and do any more research in the woods. Go in the woods. There may be something out there. There may be another burnt tree or stump or leaves or whatever. So I think that he could have gone, did a little bit more. I voted not guilty. I think that her killer is still out there. I think that she was able to tell them Eric or Derek. And I do. I think that that young lady's killer is still out there. I believe that she knew who he was and she was telling them Eric set her on fire. I do. I believe that. I was not convinced of the DNA on the keys. I was not convinced that the mysterious man that was never followed up on, the time that it took, even though the prosecuting team said that he had time to set her on fire, go follow the little route through Cole Haley's backyard to his sister's house. It would be hard for me to say that he is innocent in this whole ordeal. I do not believe that Quentin Tellis doused Jessica Chambers and set her on fire, with gasoline and set her on fire. I do not.
The retrial was set for September 24th, 2018. This time, the jury would come from a different part of the state, Oktibbeha County, about 120 miles to the east. I wondered what each side would do differently this time. I knew that the prosecutors planned to call new witnesses, and this time the defense was considering calling witnesses too. I was curious about what these new witnesses would bring to the table. But before the trial would begin, in July 2018, there was some surprising, shocking news. The defense filed a motion to remove John Champion and his office from the case entirely because of allegations of misconduct. Here are a series of news reports that followed the motion.
Explosive allegations tonight against North Mississippi's top prosecutor. A new court filing claims DA John Champion tried to coerce a witness before the upcoming retrial in the death of Jessica Chambers.
This new filing asked for Champion to be thrown off the case altogether.
Palmer accuses DA John Champion of prosecutorial misconduct and ethical violations.
Here's how it started. Tellis's attorney, Darla Palmer, received a call from an inmate she represents named Jalen Cottle. Cottle claimed that John Champion asked him to testify against Tellis in the upcoming retrial in exchange for leniency in his own case. Champion denied the accusations, and Judge Chatham held a hearing on July 9, 2018 to hear testimony and arguments.
Motion for recusal of the district attorney.
Can you set your name for the record?
J. Matthews Cottle.
You and Mr. Champion had a conversation.
He asked me, did I know when Tellis? And I said he was gonna sell on me.
What else did Mr. Champion say to you?
He told me that I need to testify against you. He told me that he won't put me away for life. And he was trying to say, if I help him, he'll help me.
Did Mr. Champion ever suggest to you what your testimony should be?
He said he gonna want me to get up on the stand and say that Q told me that when he first met Jessica, that he told her that his name was Eric.
If Jalen Cottle was truthful, that John Champion wanted him to lie at Quentin Tellis' retrial, then the district attorney was trying to create evidence to fix the biggest problem with the prosecution's case, that Jessica apparently named her killer as Eric. This would be both unethical and illegal. After Jalen Cottle testified, John Champion took the stand and was questioned by Assistant District Attorney Jay Hale.
Please solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give involving the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help
you God. I did. In April of 2018, did you receive information from another attorney about Mr. Tellis?
I did. I was advised by Quentin Tellis had told Jalen Cottle that Jessica Chambers had called him Eric as kind of a pet name.
If it were deemed to be true, would Quentin Tellis making that statement be a big deal?
It would be a huge deal. I did not believe him. I felt like Mr. Kyle was probably looking for help on his case, and I just did not believe it at all.
Your Honor,
what? Cross?
Oxygen presents a groundbreaking original series, Unspeakable Crime, The Killing of Jessica Chambers.
A teenage girl burned alive.
From Oscar-nominated and Emmy Award winner Joe Berlinger comes the riveting limited TV series event.
White people just saying that black people did it, or black people saying white people did it.
A horrific death by fire divides a small town, but is the right man on trial?
Eric is not on trial here today. He should be.
Unspeakable Crime, The Killing of Jessica Chambers. Saturdays at 7, 6 Central, only on Oxygen, the new network for crime.
While cross-examining John Champion, Alton Peterson made an argument to the judge that Champion could have recorded his meeting to avoid any misgivings.
Mr. Champion could have videotaped this meeting, and if we had evidence like that presented to the court, then we could ascertain exactly what happened in that meeting.
Jay Hale argued that the motion to recuse his office should be denied.
I don't believe for a second that Mr. Champion would try to get this man to lie.
Judge Chatham took a break, then returned with his decision.
I've heard no evidence in this case that would lead me to believe that there's been any misconduct that would prejudice Mr. Tellis' case. This case will proceed for trial beginning on September the 24th.
The judge also noted that the Mississippi rules provide for a different procedure when alleging attorney misconduct and that his courtroom is not the venue. He was referring to the fact that Darla Palmer and Alton Peterson could have filed a grievance with the state bar that licenses attorneys. As far as I know, as of the end of the retrial, no bar complaint was filed. Meanwhile, as the retrial approached, both families were full of apprehension. Jessica's father, Ben.
Jessica trusted too much in everybody. She always wanted to see good in everybody, you know. I hope they pick a jury that don't know nothing about the case and let them just hear the evidence and try it that way. That's where you know you get a fair judgment, whatever, you know. But that will never happen, you know. The justice system's, everything's backwards. A murderer's got more rights than me and you do.
Quentin's sister LaQuenta and mother Rebecca had their own reservations.
The justice system is terrible. It's not a fair justice system in Panola County.
And I'm not racist, but I done been to court and seen it happen too many times. All the black people go up there, down the road they go. For white folks, they go walk right on out the door. They don't do nothing to them. And it's just sad, you know. If you're going to do justice, make it equal.
As scheduled, on September 24th, 2018, the retrial began. Once again, a jury was picked in a day and bused to Panola County, where they checked into a Batesville hotel for the duration of the trial. This time, the panel of jurors would be 9 black, 3 white, 6 women, and 6 men. The following day, everyone assembled in the same courtroom as last year for opening statements and the beginning of the state's case. The trial began differently from the first one. This time, Assistant District Attorney Jay Hale delivered the opening statement for the prosecution instead of District Attorney John Champion.
I will recognize the state of Mississippi for opening statement.
Good morning. We want you to come up here having no agenda, having no bias, being fair to Quentin Tellis, and being fair to Jessica Chambers. You're going to hear about an intelligence analyst during the course of this trial. Every bit of that information that was brought in by the Sheriff's Department was sent to this intelligence analyst, and he compiled records upon records on each of these different suspects. Ultimately, every one of them were excluded as suspects. I want you to be observant and listen, because I know based on the evidence that's going to be put before you that you're going to have plenty of information to find him guilty of capital murder beyond a reasonable doubt. Thank you.
It was the same team for the defense, Darla Palmer and Alton Peterson, and as in the first trial, lead attorney Palmer opened for the defense.
Court recognizes Ms. Palmer for opening the statement by the defense.
Good morning. December 6, 2014, minutes after Ms. Jessica walked towards trained people who were standing and kneeling as close to her, even closer than what I am to you now, and she told these first responders, one name, and that name was Eric. Now, don't get distracted by state witnesses that say Jessica could not have possibly said that on that day. Guess what? They weren't there. It's never going to change that Eric did this, no matter what the state says to diminish that. And we will ask that you find Quentin not guilty as a result. Thank you.
The prosecution's theory of what happened the night Jessica was set on fire 4 years ago was the same, but there would be a few new witnesses this time around. The witnesses would start the same way as before, beginning with Jessica's mother, Lisa, setting the tone. As the first witness, she began by talking about Jessica's last day and their last phone call less than an hour before Jessica was set on fire. And, like the first trial, she was followed by Jessica's good friend, Keisha Meyer, who again described riding around with Jessica and Quentin that morning. But the next witness was a new one for the state. District Attorney John Champion called a speech-language pathologist, Dr. Carolyn Higdon, to cast doubt on what the first responders thought they heard Jessica say, that a man named Eric, or Derek, set her on fire.
Could you tell the jury a little bit about what is speech-language pathology?
Speech-language pathology is the assessment and treatment for individuals from birth to death that have communication disorders.
If the lungs are affected, say by fire, would that affect the ability to make a understandable sound?
It would, because you have to have the breath pressure first. So if the lungs are damaged, they're not going to be elastic enough to take in the amount, the air, to allow that to push on through the vocal folds.
Did you form an opinion as to whether or not Jessica Chambers would be able to make articulate sounds?
My expert opinion is that given the severity of what I saw, it would be impossible for her, for this person, to make individual sounds in any way.
Tender the witness, Your Honor.
Alton Peterson crossed for the defense.
Dr. Higdon, is it your opinion that on the date in question, it would have been impossible for Ms. Chambers to say the word Eric?
There's no way this person produced an articulate sound from very soon after this burn started.
But you indicated in your testimony to the district attorney's office, Dr. Higdon, that you don't do medical diagnosis.
Speech-language pathologists are not MDs. They don't do medical diagnosis.
Attorney to the witness, Your Honor.
WMC reporter Janice Broach has been covering the Jessica Chambers case since the beginning and was at the courthouse once again for the retrial. Here's her reaction to Dr. Higdon's testimony.
I don't think that Dr. Higdon made an impression on the jury. I would not have thought, okay, wow, Jessica Chambers could never have said that after hearing her testimony.
But there were others who thought Dr. Higdon was solid. She's a respected speech-language pathologist across the country. Next on the stand was the parade of first responders who tended to Jessica at the scene of the crime. One by one, they recalled what they saw and experienced that ill-fated night. But this time, their testimony was a little different, a little more detailed, as they described Jessica and her speech or the sounds she made. They seemed to try to downplay their testimony at the first trial, when they were more certain of what they heard, that Jessica said Eric did this to her, starting with Cole Haley.
Mr. Haley, did officers with the Cortland Fire Department respond to Heron Road for the car fire?
Yes, sir. When I got to her, she was walking towards me, her arms outstretched, saying, help, help me, help me. Not loud, but I could understand she was saying, help me.
She was attempting to speak, is that correct?
Attempting, very, very garbled, but she said, somebody set me on fire. She kept telling me, you know, I'm going to die.
Tell the witness,
Your Honor. All right, you may cross.
Good afternoon, Mr. Haley.
Good afternoon.
You're not saying that you could not understand the things that Jessica was saying to you.
When she was saying, help, help, mm-hmm. help me, I can understand that.
You testify that she has said, "I'm going to die." You understood that?
Yes, ma'am.
As the first responders continued, I was a little surprised at the differences and how they were doubting themselves about what they heard.
What is your name?
Will Turner.
Were you able to hear what she was saying?
I was trying to get her name and who did it to her, and all you could hear was, just, she was trying to get something out, but I couldn't hear.
Even Daniel Cole, one of the firefighters who spent more time with Jessica at the scene than others, was giving more descriptive testimony.
The more we talked to her, the more difficult it became for her to speak. It would get more breathy.
Did you, in fact, make out what you thought was a name?
I did. And it was like, Harry. It wasn't just like, Eric, Jessica, who did this to you, Eric? That was not the case.
Here's a clip from the first trial when Daniel Cole seems certain that Jessica clearly said the name Eric.
I did hear Eric did this to me. Eric set me on fire. That's what I heard.
In the retrial, on cross-examination, Darla Palmer asked Daniel Cole to read his report aloud, where he unequivocally stated that he heard Jessica say, quote, "Eric set me on fire," close quote.
If you will, please, read that third paragraph.
I then asked what happened, and Jessica responded saying, "Eric set me on fire." I asked Jessica again what happened, and she stated multiple times, "Eric set me on fire."
I turn the witness, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right.
Another new witness called at this retrial was a woman named Sherry Flowers. She claimed she picked up a man on the road near the crime scene the night Jessica was set on fire and gave him a ride. She dropped him off close to where Tellis' sister lived.
Miss Flowers, when you left your house, what did you see?
I saw a person walking.
Did that individual say anything to you?
Well, he wanted to know which direction I was going, and I asked him where he was trying to go. And he told me he heard his aunt's house had caught a fire.
Were you okay giving him a ride?
I was.
Was it a African-American or a Caucasian male?
African-American.
And you didn't know this person, correct?
No.
Did you tell anybody in your family that you had picked up a man on that night?
I spoke with my mother and my sister about it.
Did one of them encourage you to come forward to law enforcement?
My sister did.
And why didn't you come forward to law enforcement?
I couldn't remember the person, and it felt like it was irrelevant.
Your Honor, I tender the witness.
Cross.
Good afternoon, Ms. Flowers.
Good afternoon.
You've not felt compelled to tell this story to anyone prior to now. Why now?
I was questioned now.
Have you been threatened?
No.
Has anyone promised you anything for your testimony?
No.
You have one son that's been incarcerated?
Yes.
Have you been promised anything in regard to your son?
No, I haven't.
You don't know Quentin Tellis personally, do you?
No, I don't.
Here is WMC reporter Janice Broach's reaction to Sherry Flowers' testimony.
She did not know Quentin Tellis. She could not identify Quentin Tellis. We were expecting in the trial that the prosecution was going to say, "And was that man Quentin Tellis?" But no one ever said that.
Another new witness called by the prosecution was Thelma Taylor. Her husband, Willie, was the suspicious man at the scene, the one whose tag number was given to the police. Thelma said she heard the commotion that night. She lived nearby and sent her husband to check on it to make sure their daughter wasn't involved. So that question was now answered. In the first trial, jurors took a field trip called a jury view. I followed along then as jurors went to several locations the prosecution said were key to their case. I thought the jury field trip was useful, since jurors could see firsthand the crime scene and other locations relevant to the case. There weren't many photos taken of the scene the night Jessica was burned, so it was helpful for jurors to be there. This year, the jurors went on two field trips, one during the day, which covered a few key locations, such as the crime scene, the spot Jessica's car keys were allegedly found by a man named Jerry King, the M&M store, and the Tellis home. But they added a second trip, this one at night. It was supposed to be a recreation of the noise level at the scene on the night Jessica was set on fire, another effort to discredit that first responders heard Jessica say Eric or Derek. The defense strongly objected to this, but it was overruled. At about 7:30 p.m. that night, the jury, judge, attorneys, Quinton, media, and others were at the crime scene with the fire trucks and other vehicles placed in the same spots as the night of the crime. Once positioned, the engines and pumps were turned on to recreate the noise level. Jurors were allowed to walk around, including to the back of a fire truck where Jessica had lain until the ambulance arrived. Then the engines and pumps were turned off, and Assistant District Attorney Jay Hale questioned Daniel Cole about the activities at the scene on the night of the crime.
Hey there, I'm John.
And I'm Darren.
And this is Martinis and Murder,
a weekly podcast that rehashes crimes, investigates new information, and ponders theories you may have never even considered. And we do it all while drinking.
Because frankly, that's how most things in life should be done, right?
Of course.
From murders you've seen on the news to remote crimes in areas of the world you've never even heard of,
we're the place for mysterious murders and creepy crimes.
So hit that subscribe button to make sure you get new episodes downloaded every week.
Sit back, relax, and get ready for
Martinis and Murder.
Ooh, this is good, Matt.
The jury's had a chance to hear the trucks and the pumps. What other factor were you having to deal with?
You know, you have other emergency vehicles steadily coming up. The ambulance was parked right beside Engine 81. That's the law enforcement. Your phone's ringing. Your radio's here. People are calling.
Could you hear right here?
It was difficult with everything that was going on. People talking over one another.
Your Honor, I attended the witness at this site to Mr. Pearson. Mr. Cole, correct?
That's
good. Jody Morris and Seth Cook, those are the two first responders who first encountered Ms. Chambers, is that correct?
Yes, that's my understanding.
And it is also my understanding that when they first arrived here at the scene, that they were startled by a zombie-like figure coming out the woods.
All right, guys, that's enough. We got going over the same thing we went over in the courtroom. This is ridiculous. We can't have court down here. All right, let's take the jury back. Let's go.
The judge cut off defense attorney Alton Peterson very shortly into his cross-examination and right in front of the jury. I thought this was totally unfair to the defense, and I couldn't understand why Judge Chatham did that. At that moment, the trial wrapped up for the night and everyone headed home. The judge had told Peterson that he could finish his cross in the morning. The defense was concerned that the jury would think they had done something wrong. The prosecution was equally concerned about a perception of unfairness that could hurt them, though it wasn't the fault of either side. The first thing the next morning, the judge addressed the jury about what happened.
The procedural matters that went on there last night that I stopped, I want you to understand that that is 100% my responsibility. That is 100% my fault.
With that, the retrial continued. Alton Peterson chose not to continue his cross-examination of Daniel Cole from the night before. The state then called another new witness, Scott Meadows. He's a special agent for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, or ATF. He replaced Tim Douglas, who testified last year. Douglas is now retired. Meadows and Douglas were part of the team who questioned Tellis multiple times about a year after Jessica died, and in which he changed his story from not seeing Jessica the night she was burned to seeing her that night when they went to Taco Bell in Batesville, then returned to Cortland and his house.
Do you believe that Quentin was being deceptive purposely?
I do indeed, yes, sir.
Do people have a reason to lie or be deceptive?
They do.
And what would that reason be?
Because they're guilty.
On cross-examination, Meadows disagreed that Quinton was trying to be helpful but confused 11 months after Jessica's murder when he was questioned. Tim Douglas is not the only witness from the last trial who didn't testify at the retrial. Jerry King, who claimed he found Jessica's keys on the side of the road 2 days after she was set on fire, also didn't testify. Jerry King was colorful on the stand. The keys and DNA from them are the only physical evidence the prosecution has to allegedly tie Quinton to Jessica's murder, but prosecutors said they couldn't find Jerry King. We learned, however, that he was in fact in Panola County during the retrial. In the first trial, Jerry King referred to his baby mama on the stand, Mary Tyner. Well, I spoke with her during the retrial.
I'm Mary Tyner. Jerry was here yesterday. He came to our little girl's birthday party. I think they chose not to find Jerry because they didn't want his testimony this time.
Jerry King is no stranger to Panola County law enforcement. He's been arrested and convicted numerous times for crimes ranging from resisting arrest, DUI, and grand larceny. Prosecutors called another new witness, Chris Sanford. His nickname is Big Mike. He was one of Quinton's alibi witnesses when Quinton spoke to investigators 11 months after Jessica's murder. He had told them he borrowed Big Mike's truck that evening.
Do you know Quinton Tellis?
Yes.
On December the 6th of 2014, which would be the day that Jessica died or was burned, do you remember that day?
Yes.
Okay.
I went to Nashville.
Okay, do you remember what time you left going to Nashville?
It had to have been around by 2-something.
So if Quinton Tellis told investigators that he borrowed your truck Saturday night and drove up to meet Jessica Chambers in your truck, would he be telling the truth or would he be telling a lie?
He's lying on my truck in Nashville.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
On cross-examination, Big Mike admitted he's been convicted of a felony. He also admitted seeing Quinton in the morning on the same day Jessica was set on fire. Like the first trial, court was in session all weekend. And once again, the prosecution wrapped up with their star witness, analyst Paul Rowlett, who laid out the prosecution's theory of the case. That Quinton met with Jessica just after 5:30, they went to Taco Bell, then back to the area next to his home. Something happened in the car, and he thought he killed her. Then, according to their theory, he drove her to what would become the crime scene. Though in the first trial, Rowlett concluded that Quinton walked and ran to get his sister's truck, this time he asserted Quinton got a ride from Sherry Flowers to his sister's house. Then he drove her truck to retrieve his gas can from home, then returned to set Jessica and her car on fire. After Rowlett's testimony, the prosecution rested. Then, day six began on Sunday morning, September 30th, and unlike the first trial, the defense decided to call some witnesses of their own, one of whom was Quinton's sister, Shanika Williams.
Did you know Jessica Chambers?
Yes.
You did? Okay. How did you know her?
I'd see her uptown, give her a ride, and bring her home because I knew she was from Cortland.
Okay. Back on December 6th
yes.
of 2014, where did you go?
Well, I was at the house. Big Mike came and got me around about 11. And we rolled around and ended up in the sandbox.
And is it kind of a hangout spot?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. How long would you say you were over there at the sandbox?
All day. He dropped me off when it was getting dark.
I attended the witness, Your Honor.
Cross.
Are you aware that Big Mike's on video at the store at 2 o'clock in the afternoon by himself?
Nope.
Jury's got that.
Okay.
If the jury looks at the video and sees him on video on Saturday, with you, what are they going
to
think?
Well, he probably left and went to go to the store, but we was together all that day.
Okay.
I have no reason to lie.
You don't?
Nope.
Nothing further.
After her testimony, Shanika was upset about how things went in the courtroom.
I know who the hell I was with. Lord knows me. I try to do right. I'm tired of them being him.
Here is Ben Chambers' reaction to Shanika's testimony.
When his sister got up there, I mean, she made a fool of him. But she gonna get up there and say, oh no, they all lying, he was with me. And they had Big Mike on camera, you know. But what do you say, that's his sister. I can't blame her. I would probably done the same thing if it had been my brother.
After all the witnesses and closing statements, jurors started their deliberations. They deliberated for about 4.5 hours on that first day, then returned the next day on Monday. At one point, they asked to review some of the cell phone evidence. Then, at 3 p.m., after 12 hours of deliberations, the jury sent a note to the judge. After reading it, Judge Chatham addressed the jury in the courtroom.
Looks like y'all don't feel like y'all are going to be able to reach a decision in this case. Is that the feeling of the jury? With that, I'm going to declare a mistrial in this case. We'll be sending you home very shortly.
In the end, the jury was evenly split, 6 guilty and 6 not guilty. Just as the community has been divided on this case, so was a second jury. 2 mistrials in 2 years. As you can imagine, Jessica's family was disappointed. Here's Jessica's aunt, Deborah Sanders.
What else can we say? What else can we do?
I think they put it all on the table. It was a much better trial this time with the prosecution. I just don't know what else could be done.
Defense Attorney Darla Palmer spoke outside the courthouse immediately after the mistrial.
My client, though he would like to have gotten a unanimous verdict today, he feels pretty satisfied.
District Attorney John Champion also reacted outside the courthouse.
You know, obviously I'm extremely disappointed. I felt like, you know, we put on a good case last time and a much, much better case this time.
Will you try him again?
I'm not going to say that here today. We just got to sit down and assess things.
Quentin Tellis' sister LaQuenta and his mother Rebecca.
Hopefully this will open a lot of people's eyes on the prosecution and let them know how this town really is.
Yeah, I want a justice for my son, but I really want a justice for Jessica because that poor child did not deserve what happened to her.
Quentin Tellis has been transferred to the Louisiana State Prison at Angola, where he is serving a 10-year sentence for the unauthorized use of a debit card. Despite erroneous and factually incorrect reporting, at the time he was transferred to Louisiana in October 2018, he had not been charged in the 2015 death of a Taiwanese exchange student, Mandy Sao. He is a suspect, though, in that case. And while one family is thankful Quentin Tellis wasn't convicted of murdering Jessica Chambers, their failure to convict adds to another family's resounding pain. Jessica Chambers' father, Ben, could not be more heartbroken with the second mistrial and can only hope that one day there will be justice for Jessica.
The trial went just like I knew it would. I knew we wouldn't get justice. They just could not get that Eric out, you know. They just could not overcome that. I don't see why they should try it again, you know. I mean, I think they'll be wasting our time, the DA's time, the county's money. You get the same results, you know. I miss most of her smile. The last day I let her out at work, she looked so beautiful. I'll never forget it. And she looked back at me and she said, "I'm doing better, ain't I, Daddy?" I said, "Yeah, you are, baby. You're doing real good."
It just hurts so bad. You don't realize how bad you miss somebody till they're gone.
Thank you for listening to this 7-episode limited series about the murder of Jessica Chambers. I'll be following the next steps in this Mississippi case, as well as Quentin Tellis' charges in Louisiana. Look for updates on Oxygen.com. Unspeakable Crime, The Killing of Jessica Chambers is produced by Wilshire Studios for Oxygen Media. I'm your host, Beth Karras. From Oxygen, the new network for crime, comes an original television series about the horrific story of a teenage former cheerleader burned alive in rural Mississippi and the man accused of the crime. Who is Jessica Chambers and why would anyone want her dead? Is the right man on trial or is he the fall guy? With more questions than answers, this is the case that captured national headlines, took over social media, and left this small town shattered. With exclusive interviews, explosive discoveries, and an unforgettable trial, this is a must-see TV event. Unspeakable Crime, The Killing of Jessica Chambers, Saturday at 7, only on Oxygen.